AFR app is a powerful tool, but it does have limitations. You can't use it to change the oil in your vehicle or get rid of carpet stains. It won't walk the dog, won't pick up the dry cleaning, or take the kids to practice. But while you're doing those things, you can listen to your favorite AFR content through the app on your phone, smart device, or Roku. Just go to your app store or visit AFR.net. Listen to AFR wherever you go with the AFR app.
Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Wanted to read to you from 1 Peter chapter 5. The Apostle Peter says this, "Therefore, I exhort the elders among you, as your fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ, and a partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God, and not for sordid gain, but with eagerness, nor yet as lording it over those allotted to your charge, but proving yourselves to be examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory." We want to talk today about leadership, in general, and then specifically leadership in the church. People will ask me from time to time, Pastor Jeff, I moved from this city to another city and we're looking for a church. What should I look for in a church? And that's a good question. And to help me with this important subject of spiritual leadership, leadership in the family, and leadership in the family of God is my good friend, Dr. Chris Schroeder. Dr. Schroeder is the teaching pastor at First Baptist Texarkana. He is our counselor. He trains the staff and develops the staff. He does a lot of things, preaches, teaches, all around good guy. Dr. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, and I'm looking forward to talking about, I love this subject of leadership and pouring into those who are in our charge, like you said, either in the church or in our own families. And, yep. And you know, also even ourselves, leading ourselves. You right. can't lead others unless you can lead yourself.
Ah, very good. So you're not governed by your appetites, you're in control of those things.
Yeah. It says like setting an example. You know, how can you set an example to others if you can't even lead yourself? You know, if there's sloth or there's any kind of laziness
right.
or undiscipline.
Yeah, Paul says food is for the stomach and the stomach is for food, but God will do away with both of them. Yet the body is not for immorality, but for the Lord, and the Lord is for the body. Yeah, discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness, Paul told Timothy. And that's a big one. We need to be leading ourselves. And in the church, Chris, you know, as I mentioned, many people do move, and they move from a church where they're really doing well, but they get transferred, something happens, they have to move, and then they have to start over in a new church. And it's not easy to do that.
Yeah. Well, I like how you say about, you know, tying that into leadership and going to another church, because, you know, over time, I believe the church will take on the personality of the pastor, the leader. Mm-hmm. And so that's a good place to look, is the pastor and what you see in the pastor. If you see an example that's worthy of following, you know, mm-hmm. Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. So in the pastor, if you see someone that's worthy of following, that's probably a healthy church, a strong, healthy church.
Well, I had mentioned, I talked about this on a Wednesday night, and I called the sermon, "What is a Pastor to Do?" And so, you know, many people, they look at the job, you know, I've shared about this before, they look at the job of a pastor, and they think it's pretty easy.
Mm-hmm. One day a week.
It's one day a week, or maybe if you have a midweek service, it's 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's smile, it's be nice, and just kind of walk around. And it's not like that at all. I remember my father-in-law, before I was called into the ministry, and I was talking to him about the ministry, he said, "What you see on Sunday morning is not... that's not the full picture." Obviously, yeah. That's a part of it,
yeah.
But it's way more than that.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people younger than me, people going into or wanting to go into ministry, and they have this kind of jaded view of the way it is. Actually, they see it in a way that's kind of glamorous. And I'm like, man, I guess I'm showing them something that looks really fun and positive, which it is. It's great. Ministry is great. But there is a hard side to it that a lot of people aren't able to see.
Well, and I think, too, for when people look at you up front teaching, whether it's me preaching, you preaching, or teaching, they see us up front and they see people, you know, listening with hopefully rapt attention, and they think, man, I'd like to do that. Have everybody look at me and listen to me. It's almost like Simon the Sorcerer, that I want this power. And I know for me, that is not something I sought after. I was afraid to get up in front of people. Yeah. And so to think, I don't know how those guys do that, because I would be very nervous to do that. I mentioned in that message, What is a Pastor to Do?, that the ministry is a wonderful calling, but it's a terrible profession.
Yeah.
And, you know, Chris, when we interview guys for our ministerial staff, we talk about we used to talk about the three C's, but we added another C. So character, competence, chemistry, and then calling.
Yeah.
And calling has kind of gotten pushed to the side in our day and age, but calling is really important.
Yeah. I mean, that you are, you know, where everybody is called to be a minister. Every single person is called, every believer is called to be a minister, not just inside the walls of the church, but a pastor is called to vocational ministry. And you have to know that you're called, because times will get tough. You will be challenged. And so you can hold on to that call when you're going through tough times. I always think of Moses in Exodus chapter 3 being spoken to by the burning bush, spoken to by God through the burning bush. And that was his moment of calling. And he could always go back to that calling. And he was even reluctant in going to lead, like not thinking that he was adequate, that he had what it took to lead. But he had that calling. And so that calling is huge. And so to know that you are called, and usually if you're called, you know if you're called if people start seeing that also in you and they start validating that in you. I think your story is pretty cool as far as your father-in-law being a pastor and then Debbie growing up as a pastor's kid and the kind of ministry, the way that he did ministry. And I know I never met him, but you look, you know, really look up to him, but her not wanting to be in ministry like that anymore, wanting a different way. Yeah. And so then you being forced to lead in a different way than her dad led.
Well, her dad was very pastoral. And so we talk about, you know, the shepherd of the sheep, a pastor, the Latin word for shepherd is pastor. And so that's what we get. A pastor is not a CEO. He's a shepherd. There's a big difference.
You said the other night, that Wednesday night, about the CEO. The word that I remember is like a rancher. Remember when that was popular? Like when the church growth movement, it was like a shepherd versus a rancher. And so pastors were being told to be a rancher, which, whatever that means, it kind of means like CEO, like you're the CEO of the church, like you're running a business, you know.
And even, you know, shepherds can have large flocks. But normally, you know, as the church grows, you have to have help. And one guy can only do so much. And so we have, we're blessed at our church where we have a number of elders, number of pastors, number of overseers that are doing the ministry. And then you get everybody's gift mix.
Yeah.
And so somebody that is gifted in a way different from me, then he's added to the team and he can shore up what was a weak spot.
Yeah.
So you and I are, we're similar in a lot of ways, but we're different in a lot of ways too. And we talk about often, you know, about drains and fills.
Yeah.
And so you want to get it when you're operating in your spiritual gift. Using that gift is a fill, it's not a drain.
Yeah.
When you're operating outside of your spiritual gift, well, you can do that for a while, but you're going to deplete your strength.
Energy. Yeah.
Because you're having to expend a lot of energy in an area where you're not naturally strong.
Yeah, God didn't wire you in that way. So that is a blessing of a church with the means that we have, the resources that we have at our church, the size of our church, that we are able to put people in spots where they are operating with more fills than drains. But when you're in a smaller local church, you don't really have that benefit.
No, you're doing everything.
It does force you to equip the saints to do the work of the ministry.
Right.
But sometimes you're just trying to fill a hole. You're just, you know, putting your finger in the dike.
Well, okay. So, Chris, you're a hard worker and you want to do a good job. Mm-hmm. And I think those things are commendable. And you would hope most pastors, mm-hmm. really all pastors, have that desire. Where that can get us into trouble is then our families get shortchanged because we feel like we have to be there for this surgery and this situation and that situation and this wedding rehearsal and all these things that we have to go to. And pretty soon we have no time and no energy left for our families.
I think pastors basically, you know, men in general, but specifically we're talking about pastors and pastoral leadership. I think that there's always a tension. You're just always going to have that tension. I'm not spending enough time with my family, or I'm not doing enough at the church. You're just always going to have this tension between the two, and you're just going to always have to just kind of work in that tension and making sure that you're as balanced as possible. But it's very difficult to be balanced, especially when you have young children and, you know, your wife is priority and then the church.
Right.
And so I don't think it's an easy answer or an easy way. You're just always going to have that tension. And it does feel like the younger generation may be a little different with the work ethic compared to the older generation.
Yes. Yeah. So my father-in-law, Gerald Cannon, he was one of those rarities. So we say that a good preacher and a good pastoral care guy tend not to reside in the same person.
Yeah.
Gerald was a good preacher, and he really had a strong gift of mercy. And he was a rarity. But to do a good job on pastoral care and to be there in the hospitals and all that, especially he served in Houston. So it's not like Texarkana. I mean, the hospital is, what, 3/4 of a mile down the street.
Yeah.
In Houston, I mean, you go to the hospital, you're gone for hours.
Yeah.
And it takes you 30 minutes to find a parking place.
Yeah.
And so he was gone a lot. And then he had to prepare and study and, mm-hmm. and have something for Sunday morning and Wednesday night. And back in those days, it was Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, 3 different sermons mm-hmm. That you had to prepare. So it was a pretty tough load.
Yeah, always plenty to do. There's always something that you can be doing. There's always somebody that's in the hospital
right.
that needs care, or some kind of celebration that they want the pastor to participate
right.
in. Always something. Yeah. Always demand.
I just moved
you.
Into a new house. Come and give a blessing over this house. I mean, good mm-hmm. things, but something I learned in seminary, Chris, that's really stuck with me. Every need is not a personal call.
Mm.
And I think that when pastors take that on themselves, like, well, this person's in need, therefore it's a call on my life to do that, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to do it.
Yeah.
Now, as you saw, I got to have deacons, I got to have helpers in the church that can be me, kind of clone myself, so to speak. So we have a representative at the church that's there for your, you know, your situation, your surgery, whatever it might be. But I can't be every place at the same time.
You better not set the tone or the expectation that you are going to be. So if you start out and you're at everything in the beginning, then that's the expectation from there on out.
Yes, so. And then you're it's going to be horrible.
Or so, if a previous pastor was heavy on the shepherd aspect.
Right. Then they expect that.
Oh, yeah, then it's going to go on to you.
Well, one of the things that Chuck Swindoll said as I was studying 1 Peter chapter 5, he said, let me give a word to pastors and to churches.
Mm-hmm.
He said, for the church, don't have an expectation that is so high that no person could ever meet.
Yeah.
And so your pastor is going to always be available to you, yet he's always going to be studying, yet he's always going to be at the hospital, yet he's always going to be doing this and doing that, and he has all the spiritual gifts. Nobody has that.
Yeah.
So you have to have healthy expectations. And for the pastor with the church, I mean, you and I know, every pastor wants to go to the church that everybody is serving and they're humble and they're kind and they're building us up. But we have to have healthy expectations also. You know, you interview with a pastor search committee, and as my friend Dr. Wayne McDill says, every pastor search committee lies.
Oh, yeah.
Because they have this rosy picture of the church.
Yeah.
And it's not that they're blatantly lying, but they're presenting the best version
of basically courting. They're basically courting you. You're courting them.
They're selling a used car, and they want you to see all the features, advantages, and benefits. They're not really showing you the part that's rusted out and has been wrecked.
Yeah, you know, let's hide that from them.
Yes.
But Swindoll's right. It's expectations is a huge aspect going in, that the expectations are realistic. Because if you have unrealistic expectations of the pastor, it's going to lead to disappointment on both sides, and it's going to cause a lot of hurt on both sides.
Well, you're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here, along with Dr. Chris Schroeder. We're talking about the subject of leadership. What does the Bible say about leadership, and especially leadership in the church? We'll be right back.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at afr.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here with Dr. Chris Schroeder. We're talking about the important subject of leadership. Chris, one of our, or one of the gurus, is probably a guru in your life, he was in my life, John Maxwell, the leadership guru, says everything rises and falls with leadership.
Yeah.
And that's really true. You know, we see that in the country. So we go from having a guy that most would agree, Joe Biden, was in a diminished state during his presidency. Donald Trump has a picture of all the presidents in the White House. And when it comes to Joe Biden, it's a picture of an auto pen. And it's a little bit petty and small. But anyway, he does have that. It's pretty humorous. But Donald Trump is a strong leader.
Yeah.
You may hate the guy, but he's very consequential. When he's in charge, people know it because he makes his presence
felt. Well, he does things. I mean, verbally, he definitely talks more than any president I can remember in my lifetime. But he's a man of action, and that is something you can definitely respect about him. He's not passive.
No.
I think passive leadership is one of the worst characteristics. You know, being slothful, letting things go, kind of like the borders, you know, not doing anything about it, then there will be consequences. And not handling things because it's hard, or you're just stuck with paralysis by analysis, you can't figure out what to do, you're not able to make decisions, that can cause a lot of destruction.
Right.
And so that's a big difference between Biden and Trump.
Right. Well, and Biden was a career politician.
Yeah.
Trump is not a politician.
Yeah.
He's a businessman who
has to make things happen.
He makes things happen. Otherwise, you know, he's going to lose business.
Mm-hmm.
And in government, just like your state, your home state in California, mm-hmm. Gavin Newsom, I mean, they'll spend billions and billions of dollars on a rail system from L.A. to San Francisco that is already like 3 or 4 times over budget, and it's so delayed, mm-hmm. and it hasn't had the first 10 feet of track.
I've been watching, I watched the debate for governor of California.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been bored or something. they had 10 candidates on the stage. 8 were Democrat, 2 were Republican. But the Democrats, it's all about the programs that they want to do, and some of the programs are programs that have already been going and are failed.
Uh-huh.
And then the two Republicans, one's Hilton, that guy Hilton that was on
Steve Hilton.
Yeah, Steve Hilton. And then the other guy was a sheriff. They just don't have the programs that, you know, that people get excited about, but that's spending money,
mm-hmm.
you know, that the state doesn't have. And so you just see this major contrast, you know, bigger government, bigger programs versus less government, less programs.
Well, so I just recently had Rod Martin on the radio program, and he was saying about the fraud in Minnesota. And he said, that's just the tip of the iceberg. The fraud in California, the mm-hmm. fraud in Illinois, the fraud in Illinois,
mm-hmm.
the fraud in New York City. I mean, you start exploring this, it's just going to be an astronomical amount of money.
That's a great place to start.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of money right there.
There's a ton of money right there. So Zoran Mandani is whining and crying, we need to raise taxes, which I don't know what.
Instead of cleaning things up first.
Yeah, let's do that first.
Yeah.
And if they would realize, if you run off all the people that are quote-unquote rich, because you're taxing them to death, they just move away, and then you can't tax them anymore.
Yeah.
And then, as somebody, you know, astutely pointed out, okay, all of a sudden your rich go down a notch.
Yeah.
Because the uber rich have left. So now it's just the semi-rich, and then those people will leave, and then it's just
and those are the job producers. Rich. Those are the ones that produce the right. jobs, you know.
So. They have the jobs, they have the wealth. And so it's so much better to entice those people to stay. As Florida is seeing, yeah. hey, they come here, they love it, and the state is flourishing and everybody benefits. So let's get back to the
on that side, on that note.
On that note, the passage from 1 Peter chapter 5, where Peter is talking to pastors, to elders, presbyteros is the Greek word. We get our word Presbyterian mm-hmm. from that. But they were elders in the church, and an elder and an overseer and a pastor, three words for the same office.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But our job is to shepherd the church of God and to you know, conduct ourselves with the Bible refers to Christians as sheep. And so the Lord is the shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd, as David said. But we would be, as pastors, we're under shepherds
yeah.
Underneath the Lord's leadership. But we're given the charge of shepherding God's flock, not our flock. They belong to the Lord.
Yeah.
And as a shepherd, we think about, okay, what does a shepherd do with actual sheep? Well, I had mentioned several things a shepherd does. He has to lead the sheep, feed the sheep, care for the sheep, and protect the sheep.
Protect the sheep, yeah.
And so, Chris, as you think about those four things, does one stand out more than the others?
For some reason, the protection does, just because of the wolves that come mm-hmm. to eat the sheep. And just how much false teaching we have in our culture, and how much false teaching from the church, supposed church, the so-called church, and then also just from the chaos of the world that we're in and the media and things that are being said that's false. And that's what people are hearing constantly throughout their week. And then we have usually just Sunday, some on Wednesday, but usually just Sunday, we have just a small amount of time to speak truth into their life when they've heard lies all week long. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like out of all of them, that one is very, very important right now, is protecting the sheep and giving them a different voice from what they hear throughout the week, and how discouraged and hopeless they could feel throughout the week. And then we're giving them hope as we bring them the truth mm-hmm. of, you know, God's word.
Well, and it's really important, I think, as you were talking, I was just thinking about Peter walking on the water. Mm-hmm. As long as he was looking at Jesus, he yeah. was doing great. When he started, but seeing the wind, he became afraid. And one of the dangers that we all have is if we focus too much on the circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, it's important to know those circumstances, to know what's going on in our culture and things like that. But you can't focus on that. You have to focus on the Lord. As Nehemiah said, remember the Lord who is great and mighty, and fight for your wives, your sons, your daughters, your homes. And that's our job as a Christian, to stand up in the culture and speak the truth in love.
Yeah, and so we have that opportunity when the church is gathered, specifically on Sunday morning with, you know, teaching Sunday school classes and preaching and worship, to have people turn their focus back to the Lord, mm-hmm. you know, to fix their eyes on Jesus. And you could just feel the spirit change when people have been in the house of the Lord from the beginning to the end, of how they know that their spirit has been recharged.
Yeah.
And now they're ready to be the church scattered, to go back into the world and deal with the darkness that's in the world. And we say shine and share, to go shine in the darkness.
Right. Okay, Chris, let me ask you this. When you were pastoring in Kansas City, and you see these guys talk about all these leadership principles. I mentioned Bill Hybels, you know, he was yeah. kind of the Christian leadership yeah. guru, along with John Maxwell. He's writing all these books, he's having all these conferences, and you see the success of Willow Creek, and you're mm-hmm. just like, oh, you know, it's hard not to want to, whatever he's doing, I want yeah. to do. Whatever Rick Warren's doing, I want to do that too.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things, it's like, yeah, but how has that played out over time? And I mean, I can throw up my hands and say, well, I guess I'm not any good at this, because yeah. I don't think like George Patton. You yeah. know, I'm not this powerhouse of a leader that everyone wants to follow.
Yeah, you used the example of Moses. I've always liked that example as well. He didn't have, you said, Hybel books, Maxwell books to read, to mm-hmm. to study, to be the leader that he was called to be. Mm-hmm. All he had was God, you right. know, listening to God.
Right.
But it is intimidating. I heard Bill Hybels in early 90s, I was in Southern California, my first pastorate. Well, actually, before I was even pastoring, I heard Bill Hybels when I was like 19 or 20 years old. And when I heard him speak is when I felt called to preaching ministry. I loved the way he spoke, just so common man. Mm-hmm. He wasn't like an Adrian Rogers or a Swindoll or something like that. He was just common man. He had like 3x5 cards that he would speak off of. And there was something about his style that really spoke to me, that inspired me. And then watching the moral failure that he had, you called it a scandal. Mm-hmm. It was just so disappointing. And then, like you said, not to respond to it, never to even apologize or address it in any way. Very, very disappointing.
Yeah, it's almost like you're a deadbeat dad. You just leave your flock and, a hireling. I mean, that's what Jesus said. The true shepherd is going to stand and fight for his sheep. The hireling is going to run away.
Yeah.
And I have no respect for a guy that does that. And obviously, it seems like Bill Hybels knows the Lord, but nobody is immune to falling into temptation as we talked about just today, about money and sex and power and slothfulness. Nobody's immune to those things. But if you mess up, you need to fess up. And if you mess up publicly, royally like that before the whole nation, and really he had a worldwide ministry, it seems to me at the bare minimum you have to have some kind of a written apology, or better yet, as Tiger Woods did, got up in front of the cameras and confessed his sin to the world. And as a non-Christian, he wasn't asking people to pray for him, but he was owning his sin.
And now, John Maxwell, to my knowledge, never had any kind of moral failure or scandal. He was huge in the church world during the church growth movement. I used to go to his church in San Diego, Skyline Wesleyan Church, and it was like, man, it was a big show. And you talk about excellence, like mm-hmm. everything was done with excellence. I read all his books, listened to his cassette tapes, But I was disappointed when he left the local church. I was like, this guy's a pastor in the trenches, and he left the church. Even later on, Francis Chan did the same thing. They left the local church for another ministry. It always kind of disappoints me because I have a lot of respect for those who stay in the mm-hmm. church and believe that that's the greatest calling, to be in a church.
Right.
But Maxwell felt like his leadership would be more influential outside of the church, and he has lasted. He still does podcasts and leadership things and writes books.
Yeah, and when you think of a guy like John MacArthur, uh-huh. who's in heaven now, but
just stayed in the church.
Stayed in his church pulpit for over 50 years.
Yeah.
Chuck Smith, I mean, he was a pastor.
Swindoll. Yeah.
Chuck probably lost some momentum when he went from California to Texas.
Oh, Swindoll?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to John just staying at the same church for all those years.
Yeah, I mean, that is interesting, though, because he went from Evie Free Fullerton to the seminary. They really wanted him at DTS.
Right.
And then he had a lot of success. He changed things a lot there. Mm-hmm. And then everything that he did.
He missed the pastor.
But everything he did was all God. He never pushed a door down. Mm-hmm. It was always God opening a door and leading his path, leading him to the next step. And even that church, in DFW, Frisco, right?
Stonebriar.
Even that church did well. It's like mm-hmm. all those ministries had great success.
Well, in my opinion, Chuck Swindoll is one of the greatest preachers.
Yes, he's fantastic.
He had depth. He had humor. He was humble. He was so relatable and real. He just had I love listening to
Have
Chuck
you ever
Swindoll.
Heard his childhood testimony?
Mm-mm.
His dad didn't really like him.
Really?
He had a brother and a sister that were very loved. Of course, Lucy Swindoll, very, very, very loved. But he never felt love from his dad, specifically his dad, but really his parents. It's like they didn't really want him. And they never spoke positively into his life.
Wow.
Didn't even show up at his graduation.
Goodness.
Yeah. I've watched a lot of his testimony.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Well,
he had other people come along from the church body that began to speak into his life and saw things in him. Even when he was a Marine, mm-hmm. there were Christian men that came alongside and helped him to start memorize verses and saw that he should be a pastor.
Oh, wow. That would be a deep wound. You know, those father wounds, they run deep, and it's something that we all have that to a certain extent, and we give that to our kids, not on purpose, but just we're imperfect parents.
He doesn't show bitterness when he talks about it, but pain. Mm-hmm. But not bitterness, but definitely pain.
Yeah. Debbie and I recently watched the documentary on Burt Reynolds. It's called I Am Burt Reynolds. And that was one thing that even Lonnie Anderson, his wife, she said his parents didn't ever hug him, didn't really talk to him that much. They just were into each other, but not into their son. And Bert had the statement. He said, as a kid growing up, I would have killed to have had a hug from my dad.
Yeah.
And his dad. His dad finally told him at the very end of his life, right before he died, that he loved him and he was proud of him.
That's good.
And so he finally got that, but he got that as a, you know, man in his 60s.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah. So the pastor, he is to lead, he is to feed, he is to care for. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things, Chris, we talk about caring for the sheep and feeding the sheep. Obviously, feeding the sheep provides a lot for them. That's a part of care. But then to be there to treat their wounds and you know, affection for the sheep and those kinds of things. That's inherent in being a pastor. You have to care about people.
Yeah.
That's the number two commandment, you know, to love your neighbor as yourself. And so we're up against a break. But, you know, I've heard, you've heard that some pastors, you know, the people make the comment, I don't think he likes people very much, which is what a horrible thing to say, and if it's accurate, it's even more horrible that would be the case, that a pastor wouldn't care about the people.
You're in the business of people, pointing people to the Lord, but it really is the people business more than anything else. And an introvert, by the way, still loves people. It's just that they're not energized by people. It's all an energy issue.
Right, right.
So there can be introverts that love people. It's just that they get drained, you know, and have to get refilled.
And I think that we have to really watch that. I'm naturally introverted,
but
you have to push yourself out there to be successful in ministry.
Yep.
Well, you're listening to Real Truth for Today. We're up against a break. We have Pastor Jeff Shreve here talking to Dr. Chris Schroeder. We're talking about the subject of leadership. We'll be right back.
Candace talks about finding out she was pregnant. Thankfully, an ultrasound provided by Preborn allowed her to hear her baby's heartbeat.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
Preborn currently has clinics that do not have ultrasound machines. Would you consider a leadership gift and sponsor a machine today? These life-saving machines cost $15,000, more than most centers can afford. Your donation will save countless lives for years to come. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email pastorjeff@fromhisheart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here talking to Dr. Chris Schroeder, talking about the subject of leadership. Peter has a lot to say about it, and he's talking to pastors, and he says, I exhort the elders among you as your fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ. He saw what Jesus went through, and he's a partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed. You know, Chris, one of the things we haven't mentioned this, but we could say it goes without saying, but it doesn't. A pastor needs to have a personal relationship with Jesus.
Oh, that's good. That's
kind of important, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know pastors, I know pastors that have the title, but I don't think they've ever been born again.
Wow.
You know, when Jesus talked to Nicodemus, and he was telling him, you must be born again, Nicodemus didn't understand what he was talking about. And Jesus said, how is it that you are the ruler of the Jews and you don't understand this? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're the top of the religious heap.
Yeah.
And you don't get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I've been witnessing to a guy for a while that he's very religious and he wants to talk religion. But I don't know, I'm starting to doubt whether he has a real relationship. Mm-hmm. So you can see where pastors would be like that, where they know the right things to say as far mm-hmm. as religion.
Right.
But do they have a true relationship that can be articulated through understanding the gospel message and what's happened in their life and true life transformation?
Bailey Smith, an evangelist, he used to say, there are a lot of people that know the Word of God, but they don't know the God of the
Ooh,
Word.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
And so a lot of seminary professors can know, you know, jots and tittles yeah. about the Word of God, but they don't know
the author. Well, the enemy knows the Word, right?
Right.
Yeah.
He does, and he uses it to twist people into pretzels. Well, so Peter says, hey, I'm an elder just like you're an elder. I'm not way up here, and you're down, you know, down the ladder. We're you know, fellow elders, fellow pastors, fellow overseers. And when he talks about pastoring, as we said, that's to shepherd. And so we lead the sheep, we feed the sheep, we protect the sheep, we care for the sheep, and we do it with eagerness and a willingness, not under compulsion and not for sordid gain. Mm-hmm. We don't do it for the money. Mm-hmm. Now, we all know that we need money to live. Mm-hmm. But that's not the driving force behind your ministry, my ministry, or really anybody that would be called into ministry. We're doing it for the Lord. We're not doing it for the pay.
Yeah, there'd be you'd be kind of mixed up if you were trying to be a worldly success and you went into the calling of being a pastor. That wouldn't mix very well. And I think that does happen. And maybe you see those mega church superstar pastors and wanting to be like that, wanting to be like them or have a ministry like them. When you start, the biggest pitfall is when you start comparing. You start comparing yourself to other pastors and your church to other churches. That could be a major pitfall because then you're putting your goal into basically worldly success instead of, hey, I'm just going to be, you talk about it a lot, just be faithful where you're at and let God bring the growth.
Right.
You know.
Well, Chuck Swindoll, in the commentary I read, he said, you know, your pastor's probably not going to be well known outside of your community. Mm-hmm. Now, we live in a world today because of social media and things, people are a lot more known than they were 40, 50 years ago. But most pastors are not going to be, you mention your pastor's name three states over, they're going to be like, I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
You know, you go to a church, maybe your pastor's a nationally known person. That's a little different. But for the bulk of pastors, the call is to be faithful to the shepherd, the chief shepherd, the great shepherd, the good shepherd, and to feed and lead and love on and protect the sheep. That's the job.
And I think if you're going to do all that, you have to know the sheep. You have to be with the sheep, you know, and sheep, you know, all the jokes and all the truths about sheep. They're smelly, you know, there's trouble, you know, there's always going to be ones that are wandering that you're going to have to take care of. Mm-hmm. And so, but you're going to have to be with the sheep to know how to minister to them, how to preach and teach and counsel and take care of. You're going to have to be with them.
Right. Well, one of the key things he says in 1 Peter 5, verse 3, that we are to do this with eagerness as we shepherd the flock of God, not as lording it over those allotted to your charge. We don't say, well, I'm the pastor, you do what I say, but proving to be examples to the flock. And if nothing else, a pastor, a staff member, a deacon, really anybody who names the name of Christ, you're to be an example to other people. You're to be example to Christians. You're to be an example to unbelievers. This is what it means to walk with God.
Yeah, so there is definitely a higher standard than everyone else. So when you have that calling, you are now called to a higher standard. And so that means you have to have accountability. That means you have to be filled up every day. You know, you have to be spending time with God. You have to know when you're getting near empty. You have to really steward yourself well because of the immense calling that you have on your life to fulfill.
Mm-hmm. I had something that came up on a feed on, you know how Reels comes up on Facebook? Yes. I think it's Facebook. Anyway, this guy, heavyset pastor, was talking about going on an airplane, and he said that he just made the comment as they were getting ready to sit down, he made a comment to the stewardess that these seats are really small. She said, well, you could lose weight. And he said, well, yeah, and you could be prettier. And he said, you know, when you fell out of the tree, you hit every branch.
Wow.
And she said, well, I never. And he said, well, you have now. And he was just very sharp-tongued and very rude to her. And he said when he was putting up his bag in the overhead compartment, some of his tracks fell out.
Oh,
and the people saw that he had these gospel tracks.
Not a good witness. A
terrible witness. And to his credit, he said the Holy Spirit convicted him, which is like, I would think so. That was terrible what you said. But he went and talked to that lady, and he apologized to her. Mm-hmm. And he said, I was so wrong. Please forgive me. And she said, in all my years, I've never had anybody do that, apologize to me like that. Okay. And so it ended on a positive note. But, you know, one of the things that I say this a lot to myself and to our staff and to the church is we need to be careful because everywhere we go, especially in Texarkana, Texas, people will know you and they won't tell you that they know who you are. They know where you go to church. They know you're the pastor. You're on staff here. And they're looking to see how do you interact with people when you're away from the church. Are you kind? Mm-hmm. Are you compassionate? Are you loving? You know, do you represent Christ? Are you shining for Christ?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you a jerk?
Right. And you talked about also like during conflict, even also within the walls of the church, when someone comes at you, how you respond. They may be totally unfair in the way that they're coming at you, but how you respond is still super important. It's just a higher standard for those in the ministry. Like you said, there's men, there's women, and then there's pastors.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a higher standard, which I think we should say, Pastor Jeff, that people listening to this program, so maybe you're not a pastor and you're listening to this program, your pastor needs your support and encouragement, and they need to be shepherded as well. Pastors need to be shepherded by the church.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and grace. They need grace. Mm-hmm. I mean, they know that they're called to a higher standard and they fall short and all that, but they need, I just love those people that come alongside us that encourage,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then we know those ones that are, call them EGR, you know, extra grace required, and you see them coming and you're like, oh no, you know, what do they have now? What's what's the critique? What's the criticism now? And so be that one that builds up and not tears down.
Mm-hmm. That's really important. And so Paul told Timothy, young Timothy, let no one look down on your youthfulness, but rather in speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself an example of those who believe. Chris, when we think about the leadership of moms and dads to their kids, your kids are watching you. And we think we're teaching them through what's coming out of our mouths, and we are. But then they're looking to see, okay, you tell me to trust God, but when something happens that's unsettling in your life, do you trust God? Or do you worry? Do you fear? Do you get angry? Do you fly off the handle? The things you know, we had that statement, do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
That doesn't work in parenting.
Yeah.
Because kids watch what you do.
Yeah, they're always watching. And then sometimes you see that, okay, good, they're catching some good things also, not just negative. We have a 9-year-old who the other morning was real stressful, chaotic. The garage door broke, and they had testing that day, and they were trying to get to school. They were late. Everyone was stressed out and on each other. And then Emma, our 9-year-old, said, I think we need to pray. And then she prayed, and it's like, wow, where'd that come from?
Yeah.
So you love those moments.
Sure.
You know, so they are watching closely everything about us and the way that we conduct ourselves, not in good times, but in the bad times, in the hard, stressful times.
Well, you know, and you think about it too, Chris, for pastors and church leaders, You know, if you take all the burden on yourself, you know, we're commanded in Scripture, cast your burden on the Lord. It's His church. It's not our church.
Yeah.
It's His church, and He's responsible for the church. Mm-hmm. We don't own anything. We're just managers. We're stewards of His things. We want to do a good job. But at the end of the day, if you take ownership of that which does not belong to you, you're going to get stressed out.
Yeah.
And if you understand that, hey, I'm here to do as good a job as I can possibly do, but this is really on the Lord. This isn't on me.
Yeah.
That takes all the pressure off.
Yeah, that is a huge aspect, I think, to this whole thing. Not owning it like it's yours and squeezing it so tightly, mm-hmm. but just that knowing that you are a steward and it's God's church, you mm-hmm. know, and we're just standing on His promises.
Well, I love what it says in the book of Acts as Peter or as Stephen is preaching, and he's talking about David, and let's see where I find this. You know, because David served the Lord in his generation, and then he fell asleep.
Yeah,
then he died, and so my friend Paige Patterson said, you know, for pastors, you're going to pastor that church for as long as God wants you to pastor the church. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to move on and you're going to pass the baton to somebody else.
Yeah.
And so you're just a parenthesis in the life of the church. And then God moves on to the next guy. It was Moses, and then Moses died, and then the baton went to Joshua.
Unless you planted the church, there was a history before you,
right.
good and bad things, and there will be events after you, good and bad. So you're just a part of that. You know, if a church is an organism, not an organization, it's growing, it's got its own lifespan, you're just a part of that, just to be used by God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I think it's important for us to remember, because the church belongs to the Lord. Jesus said, upon this rock, I will build my church. He didn't say, I will build your church, or you will build my church. I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. We have the privilege as guys in the ministry to be a part of that. And if you're a leader in the church, a deacon, a Sunday school teacher, somebody that's looked up to in the church, somebody with a lot of influence, you're part of that. You're part of the leadership of the church. You want to make sure this isn't about me. This is about Jesus and motives. We talk about motives. A pastor has to constantly check his motives. What am I doing, and why am I doing what I'm doing? You know, with my father-in-law, he got a lot of strokes on the pastoral care side, probably more so than on the preaching side, although he was a strong preacher. We tend to gravitate to do more in those areas where we're getting a lot of accolades and praise and things like that. And I think pastors kind of come in full circle. They can fall prey to that. So the more time I spend at the hospital, the more time I spend with a grieving couple, the more time I spend in pastoral care things, the more people talk positively about me. I'll just do more of that, because nobody seems to be all that jazzed about my sermons. And then sermon prep goes down even more.
Well, you said one of those areas, you know, that Peter said was feeding the sheep.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, thinking about like you're growing up and you're being healthy and your mom taking care of you, and she put vegetables on the plate, you know, she fed you to be healthy. You didn't look back and go, thank you, Mom, for all those years of feeding me vegetables and giving me the vitamins that I need. But you did need that. That's very, very healthy. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's a good reminder to pastors, just to feed the sheep. And there is a product of that over a long period of time. You talked about MacArthur. That's what I'm so impressed about his ministry, is over a long period of time, him feeding the sheep, there's great byproduct of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so care for the sheep, but don't forget to also feed the sheep, you know, the truth.
Well, and
don't water it down, skirt the truth.
Right. And challenge them to walk on the high places, as Habakkuk says, you know, he's made my feet like hind speed and makes me walk on my high places. And so God has created us as believers and as children of the King to walk on those high places, not to live under our circumstances, but to rise above our circumstances as we trust the Lord, and to do it with a right heart, right motive. So at the end of it all, we can hear the Lord say, well done, my good and faithful slave.
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking about the subject of leadership. Dr. Chris Schroeder has been my guest today. Hey, maybe this is a program that you need to share with your pastor to just be an encouragement to him. You can always go to AFR.net and find out more about this, or go on YouTube to Real Truth for Today, and you can share this program, the video of this program. Hey, go out today, shine for Christ. Share what great things the Lord has done for you, and God will use you as his witness. God bless you.